Here, the next case, Evans versus the People.
May it please the court, I'm John Gervelius and I represent Joey Evans. Your Honor, today I'm going to be discussing Colorado's Regimented Inmate Treatment Program, otherwise known as boot camp. That's how I'll refer to it. Mr. Evans originally received an 8-year stipulated sentence in the Department of Corrections, which was the statutory minimum. While in the Department of Corrections, he qualified for it and was placed in Colorado's boot camp program. He completed the program, and as the statute allows, he was referred back to the trial court for resentencing. The trial court found that he completed...
Can I ask you one question about that? I just thought I wasn't sure, before you skip totally over when he gets out of it. How does he get into boot camp?
Your Honor, there are a couple of ways. Certainly the trial court can make a recommendation, but usually that's the DOC's determination, I believe.
And
I
think it's like statutorily, is that something that happens at the diagnostic center when during his initial time and they decide, the executive director decides where to place him?
Your Honor, I don't know the exact answer to that, but I believe you're correct. I know the executive director has the final say, but in terms of the process individually, you know, sometimes I think it varies, but I don't know for sure.
No, I'm just curious. He had the expectation that if he did this, he'd get reduced below the minimum?
Your Honor,
is that part of your argument?
Your Honor, there is no expectation or guarantee that he does get any sort of reduction if he completes boot camp. Certainly, that's not the argument. The argument here is that the trial court found that that was the appropriate thing to do, and that it erroneously concluded that it lacked the statutory authorization to go below the enhanced mandatory minimum.
Right. He'd like to do it, but the law doesn't permit him to do that. Judges get these strange dilemmas.
Your Honor, I wouldn't argue that that we're vitiating any sort of sentencing scheme here. Mr. Evans was only asking to go below the enhanced mandatory minimum.
Okay, so it's not below the absolute minimum.
No, Your Honor, that was never put on the table.
All right.
And so, I mean, as we've just kind of discussed here, the whole question we're here to decide is whether or not the trial court had this authority to go below the mandatory minimum. And Your Honor,
can you talk about what the sentencing statute permits and requires with respect to this defendant?
The sentencing statute, you mean boot camp, or?
No, the sentencing applicable to this charge.
Okay, Mr. Evans received an enhanced sentence. He was on probation at the time, and he was convicted of an F3. So that required that if the court sentenced him to DOC, that he be enhanced to, believe, at least the midpoint of the presumptive, but not twice the maximum.
Okay, so that gives me the sentencing range if the trial court decided to sentence him to DOC. Was the sentence to DOC mandatory?
No, Your Honor. It wasn't as an initial matter. It doesn't appear that at least ComCorp was off the table or other sentencing alternatives.
I know.
What were the other sentencing alternatives?
I believe, Your Honor, that he could have been eligible for a deferred prosecution.
When you say at least initially, deferred prosecution, what about probation?
Initially, he was not eligible for probation.
Because?
Because under the statute at that time, I believe he had a prior felony within 10 years, and that this felony was a Class 3 felony, so that made him statutorily ineligible for probation on the front end.
Now, when you say that that a possible sentencing alternative was deferred judgment and sentence, I mean, that's not exactly correct, is it? I mean, that requires an agreement between the prosecutor and the defense, and so that was not one of the judge's sentencing alternatives.
Certainly, Your Honor, that wouldn't, I mean, the judge couldn't do that on his own discretion.
So neither initially nor at the time of resentencing was either a deferred judgment and sentence or probation possible for this particular defendant?
No, Your Honor. Actually, the boot camp statute itself put probation back on the table by the statutory language itself. Under subsection 104, it authorizes the trial court to either impose probation or concord, and it doesn't qualify that language in the statute whatsoever.
Then you have conflicting statutes, right? It's two felony rule.
Well, Your Honor, I don't think the statutes conflict. Boot camp is its own animal. It's a special sentencing provision, and it's supposed to allow the trial courts to have this discretion. I don't think that they actually conflict. I think it's just that boot camp statute is its own thing.
But if boot camp can only be imposed by the executive director, then one has to have been sentenced to incarceration to be eligible for boot camp. Is that not true?
I believe that's correct, Your Honor.
And does the statute not say that if a defendant is sentenced to incarceration, that he can't be sentenced below the mandatory minimum?
Yes, Your Honor. The sentencing statutes generally do say that. That's correct. If DOC, then you have this range in DOC. That's correct. But as I stressed, boot camp itself provides the authorization to at least drop below the enhanced minimum, because as here, it authorized the trial court to impose probation, and the trial court noted that. And certainly if the trial court can impose probation to any time it likes or any length, and therefore, you know, send Mr. Evans back out on the street, it can at least drop below the enhanced mandatory minimum. Boot camp isn't all or nothing in the way that it operates.
Well, it boils down to that you're right about the sentencing statute itself. It gives discretion to the trial judge. But here there was no discretion because he wasn't eligible for probation, right? Well, so how do we, you want us to totally interpret that section in the boot camp statute that authorizes probation?
Well, yes, Your Honor. Where the legislature has otherwise deemed probation to be qualified, that is, you know, if to carry forth and say it would only oppose probation if he was otherwise eligible, therefore, it has said that, and it said that in the crime of violence statute, for instance. Here it is completely unqualified, that language. It just simply permits the court to impose probation or comcor. And one of the points of boot camp here, Your Honors, is that it's a very important and special program, but it's not just anybody can go through it. It's highly selective. Only 400 inmates per year are even allowed to participate, and 100 at a time. Now, it's there for a specific purpose, and the legislature designed it so that just anybody would be able to go through it or even be admitted to it. And if you listen to the legislative history behind the 2004 amendments, that's sort of heightened. I mean, the legislature really wanted to make sure that going through boot camp meant something, that not just anybody could do it, and they really wanted to make sure that the trial courts had this discretion after they have all this information coming from DOC to be able to reduce the sentence if that was appropriate.
So does this create a... I suppose we can still hear. Do you need notes to respond? I was going to say, does that create the situation then in which the legislature would seem to have intended that the prison officials could decide to give the judge discretion to put this defendant on probation where he wouldn't have otherwise had it?
I'm not sure I understand your
question. Only the prison officials can decide to send him to boot camp, right?
Yes, that's correct, Your Honor, on top of legislative qualifications. But if they meet those qualifications, it would be the prison or the DOC director, I believe.
So all I was doing was trying to look at the sequence here in terms of what the legislature intended when you're describing the legislative history on that. So that would seem to suggest, though, wouldn't it, that they've created rules that tell the judge you can't put this person on probation. But if the executive director of DOC decides to pick this guy out and make him one of those select few that can go to boot camp, then upon completion of boot camp, the judge does have discretion. So it's only based on this decision of the executive director that the judge can get discretion to sentence somebody to probation who would not otherwise be eligible to probation. Is that sort of the sequence?
That would be the sequence, Your Honor, but I would emphasize that while the director gets to choose who initially goes into boot camp, the director does not get to choose who actually gets to complete it. I mean, the program is so difficult. In this case, for instance, Mr. Evans was in a class where more than half the people didn't complete it. So, yeah, as an initial matter, the director gets to choose, but the director, you know, has no say in terms of who actually goes through and completes this difficult program. So, Your Honors, the fundamental thing to take away from the language in the statute and from the 2004 legislative history behind amendments and even this decision in Keller is that boot camp really is its own animal, and it's designed for a specific purpose. And
another way to say it is it's a special statute that controls over the more general statutes for sentencing, isn't that?
Yes, Your Honor. It's very specific, yeah. And it's designed for a very specific purpose. And they wanted to limit prison overcrowding, save costs, and promote development for inmates. And in order to do this, they needed to give the sentencing court's discretion to be able to look at the performance in boot camp and to decide what's best to do. Now, as I said, the legislature designed this so not just everybody would go through it, and they actually sought to really limit the pool of eligible offenders. So, while it's certainly the case that not everybody who's going to go through this program is going to be appropriate for sentence reductions, that's certainly true, Your Honors. But that's sort of the point, is that it's the trial court judge who gets all this information from DOC after seeing all this who should be able to decide that. I mean, that's what the legislature wanted, was to be able to give that judge the discretion to decide after that.
And so is your argument inconsistent, attempting to distinguish Smith, or is it inconsistent with Smith?
No, Your Honor, it's actually designed, or I'm distinguishing Smith. It's legally distinguishable from Smith.
Tell me why specifically.
Certainly, Your Honor. In Smith, both initially and on resentencing, the defendant there was not eligible for probation or ComCore. As an initial matter, original sentencing, that was because the defendant in Smith was sentenced to, was sentenced under child abuse resulting in death. And that statute, the sentencing statute, that was very specific and took ComCore and probation off the table.
There was a mandatory minimum sentence to DOC.
That's correct.
Here instead you have if the judge sentences to DOC, and therefore there's a mandatory minimum sentence if there's a sentence to DOC, but there are alternatives, probation.
That's correct,
Your Honor. But that alternative isn't applicable to your client, which is what you explained to me earlier when I was questioning you.
Well, correct, Your Honor, but it's at resentencing after boot camp, because the relevant difference between Smith in this case is when Smith goes through boot camp, it was actually the boot camp statute itself that took or kept probation and ComCore off the table, as he noted in the Smith decision in footnote one. It was the boot camp statute that did that. And here, as in this case, the trial court actually had the option of probation or ComCore by the statute's explicit language.
Back on the table is what you're saying.
That's correct.
And is there something in the legislative history that explains that? If we figure it's ambiguous, and we look to the aid of legislative history, have you run that to be sure you're right about this point? That's what the legislators meant?
Well, Your Honor, the legislative history, at least in the 2004 amendment, showed that the whole purpose was that they could, if the trial court felt that it was appropriate, after going through DOC, to put the inmates back on the streets or to get them out of DOC. I mean, that was the goal. They didn't mention the sentencing ranges. So I believe that really was their intent. Your Honors, unless there's further questions on this point, I'd like to reserve my remaining time for rebuttal.
May it please the court. My name is Jonathan Farrow, registration number 35754, and I represent the people of the state of Colorado. Despite his efforts to distinguish Smith, the petitioner essentially asked this court to reverse itself for no persuasive reason. In Smith, this court unanimously held that the Regimented Inmate Training Program Act does not permit a district court to alter the statutory sentencing ranges set forth in 18.1.3.401. Despite completing the program here, petitioner could not receive a sentence reduction because his 8-year mandatorily enhanced sentence is already the minimum allowed by law. Sections 18.1.3416 and subparagraph 8 must be harmonized. I believe the petitioner has conceded that today. This court has recognized the mandatory nature of the enumerated aggravating circumstances that are listed in 18.1.3401.
Mr. Farrow?
Yes.
Could you discuss, I think that you can distinguish Smith in the abstract, as I think your opponent did. But here, what bothers me is he's ineligible for probation because the statute in Smith had a lot of mandatory language in it and said you can't reduce it and so forth. But what do we do? How do we handle this? The idea of that Smith does apply because of he could not have initially been sentenced to probation or given a deferred sentence. What's your position?
Well, first of all, I don't think that really goes anywhere because the trial court here recognized the possibility of probation, and it expressly found in the record that the defendant was not appropriate for a modification to probation. So, I mean, as an initial matter, it's off the table. I mean, really, the only question is...
Well, it's off the table by statute, right? I mean, even if he wanted to put him on probation, he couldn't have.
Right? He couldn't have?
No, he could not have.
Initially?
Initially, yes.
Correct.
All right.
Okay.
So that's a little different than Smith.
Well, okay, academically then, I mean, if we look at the RITP statute, the key difference here is that it expressly authorizes probation. We don't have anything,
so what do we do?
We don't have anything in the statute that expressly authorizes reduction below the mandatory minimums. And that's what this court recognized in Smith. That's the difference between the regimented inmate training program statute and, for example, the crime of violence provision that actually does authorize them specifically.
Let me ask you that. Actually, I think it's the same question, but in a slightly different manner. Would the outcome in this case be different if the defendant was initially eligible for probation, but the court declined to grant probation and instead sentenced to DOC?
Not at all.
Why not?
Because, again, we're talking about terms of years in this case. The judge was trying to...
The statute doesn't mandate the DOC sentence, does it? The sentencing statute doesn't mandate, or sentencing statutes do not mandate a DOC sentence.
So about the enhanced sentence?
No, they do if the judge decides that DOC is appropriate.
Well, then, judge decides that DOC is appropriate, the enhanced sentencing statute still doesn't mandate DOC. Instead mandates a minimum, a mandatory sentence.
If the defendant is otherwise eligible for probation, subsection 4018 doesn't address that, doesn't change that. In fact, it expressly considers that possibility by saying if the judge chooses to sentence the defendant to incarceration.
If a defendant were eligible for probation but sentenced under this enhanced statute to DOC and then successfully completed boot camp, why would probation not be a sentencing possibility for that defendant?
I don't believe I said that it wouldn't be.
Well, I was attempting to ask you whether this case would be different if this defendant were actually eligible for probation initially.
Okay, I misunderstood your question.
Okay.
I mean, different in the sense that the outcome is still the same. But, you know, whether or not an offender is eligible for probation or not initially, I mean, when he completes the program, the regimented inmate training program statute expressly says that that his sentence can be modified to probation. I mean, of course he's going to be in DOC, as Justice Coates mentioned. He's going to be in DOC if he's going to go through the program. Whether or not he's initially eligible, the program itself expressly says that he can be modified to probation.
So it's helpful to me if we just start at the beginning. When he first sentenced him, he was not eligible for probation. Is that right?
I believe that's correct.
And so he got this term of years to the DOC,
yes.
And it had to be an enhanced sentence.
Yes.
Then he went off to boot camp, and then he came back to the judge, and at that point he was eligible for probation because of the boot camp statute, but the judge said, no, I don't want to do that.
That's correct.
Okay. And he said, since I don't want to do that, now my hands are kind of tied. I don't want to put him in probation, but I don't think I can go beneath the DOC sentence because that's as low as it can go. Is that right?
That's correct.
So I understand that sequence of events correctly.
You do.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. And I think that that actually illustrates something, a good point here, and that is that Mr. Evans was rejected by Community Corrections. He applied for Community Corrections after he completed the Regimented Inmate Training Program. Going from Department of Corrections to Intensive Supervision Probation is a very big step. It actually skips an intermediate step of ComCorps. If you look at the Regimented Inmate Training Program statute, it actually provides that people who complete the program are subject to an early release from the Department of Corrections. And then from that release, they go into community corrections, which is still a corrections environment, but it's in the community. Then they go into the next step, which is intensive supervision probation. And I think when you think of it that way, that the judge's determination in this case really makes a lot of sense. Not that it's really subject to much appellate review. It's entrusted to his discretion.
It helps because what he's saying is the legislature needs to be explicit about reducing the term.
That's right.
If he's going to stay in jail, and the judge decided he's staying in jail. So, I mean, that's the judge exercising his discretion, right?
Absolutely, Your Honor.
Could I go back then to Justice Rice's question? Maybe I'm missing something here, or well, maybe we can clear up for me. I thought opposing counsel said that after completing boot camp, the judge did not entertain or exercise his discretion with regard to probation because he felt that he was barred from doing so. I thought I understood you to say he decided to exercise his discretion not to put the defendant on probation. Can you resolve that?
Sure. I mean, it's in the sentencing hearing, and I'll read to you from the relevant portion. The judge says, you have been accepted to ISP, or at least I could order ISP. I do not find that it's appropriate to sentence you to ISP. And then he goes on to say, I think it would be appropriate to reduce the term of years. And that's on page 11 at the reconsideration hearing.
So to your understanding from the record and the way you've read it there, at least those parts would seem to indicate the only thing he felt barred from doing as a result of the mandatory minimum statute, he felt barred from giving a reduced sentence to incarceration.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Well, with the caveat that the judge recognized he had been rejected from community corrections.
Fair enough.
Doesn't it seem like an odd result? You can put him out of community correction, out of DOC into ISP, but you can't reduce his term length?
In a way it is, and I recognize that. And I think that's why the petitioner argues that if we construe the statute, if you construe the statute as you did in Smith in this case, then you're going to somehow frustrate the purposes of the program. But that's just not true. This program did mean something to Mr. Evans. He's received a substantial benefit from the program.
Which is what?
Well, as evidenced by his eloquent remarks at the hearing, he has fulfilled the statutory objective of promoting his personal development and self-discipline. He's also been released already from the Department of Corrections into a community corrections program. So applying Smith here doesn't frustrate the purposes of the act. And I just want to add also that, and petitioner conceded this, reconsideration of sentence, that is a reduction in terms of years, or even a change to a different setting, such as ISP or community corrections, is purely discretionary. There is no guarantee in the statute that a graduate of the program would receive this. His only right is to ask for it.
But what about the legislative history? Is there any implication that the legislature intended to allow a reduction of the jail time?
Well, first of all, I think the statute clearly reflects that they intended to allow reductions in general. But as far as you mean below the mandatory minimums, it's silent on that, Your Honor. I didn't hear anything in the legislative history that would really go towards that at all. I think, though, that if we think of what is the reduction or modification in the statute, Surely it's a very important incentive or carrot for the participants of the program. But it doesn't make sense that the incentive itself is the purpose of the statute. The purpose of this whole program is, as I mentioned earlier, to promote personal development and self-discipline. The purpose of this program is to break the cycle of recidivism or eliminate recidivism. It's so that we can actually do some rehabilitation for the cream of the crop, this very limited class of offenders that have the best, at least in terms of some statutory factors, some filtering that goes on, they have the best probability for rehabilitation. That's the purpose of this program. And yes, offering someone the opportunity to have their sentence reduced or modified is an important incentive. But again, it's not the only incentive, as I just mentioned. As Mr. Evans here, the statute provides an early release, a mandatory early release, 28 months early into community corrections programs. I just like to add as well that under an established canon of construction, that the General Assembly has amended the Regimented Inmate Training Program Act after this court decided Smith, yet it elected not to override this court's interpretation, demonstrates that the legislature approved and adopted it. Perhaps that's the best indication of legislative intent that we have. With that, unless there are further questions, I'd ask that this court affirm the order of the Court of Appeals. Thank you.
Your Honors, I want to touch upon briefly the state's contention that Evans would still receive a benefit under the statute. And that's certainly true. The statute does provide that if you don't receive the reduction, that you go to quad comp, or I believe it's 28 months before completion of your DOC sentence. However, this is not what the legislature's real intention was. Otherwise, why would they have this reduction scheme? Now, the legislature takes that reduction scheme very seriously, and as the court observed in Keller, because when you go to the sentencing court for reduction of sentence under boot camp, you can't summarily just reject that motion like you can a 35B. They have to actually take a good, hard look and consider all pertinent facts before making their determination. The legislature really takes that seriously. Now,
you're going to have to remind me what legislative language supports your point you just made.
Oh, I believe it's under section 104, where the court says, or I'm sorry, the legislature, the statute says that the court may not summarily deny without a complete consideration of all pertinent information. Under a 35B context, the court could just summarily deny a motion to reduce a sentence. But here in boot camp, it doesn't have that power. It really has to consider this. Now, one other point that the state makes is that the whole purpose of the statute is to promote self-discipline and to further development of the offender, and that's absolutely correct. But as the legislative history shows from the amendments of the statute, and as we know, part of boot camp is a vocational and an educational program, but the offenders will lose a lot of these skills if they go back to DOC for lengthy sentences, and that is in the legislative history in the House and Senate Judiciary Committee debates or in the reading of the statute. They really took this seriously. Your Honors, for the reasons in the brief and discussed earlier today, I respectfully ask this court reverse the Court of Appeals and trial court and remand for resentencing. Thank you.
On behalf of the court, I thank both counsel for your arguments. Please stand.